Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. Today's special guest is Michael Barnett. You know him as the composer for Clifford the Big Red Dog. He is now the composer for Ashing Pack, now available on Netflix. Now join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. Barnett, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. I'm very much looking forward to talking with you.
Thank you. I'm very much looking forward to talking with you, too.
So I always start off asking a question about inspiration. So when you decided to become a composer, do you remember what first inspired that idea?
I think it was a long, slow burn of just really enjoying and noticing that I enjoyed the music when walking out of a movie theater. Mm. And I would be humming the melody and it would just get stuck in my head. And there were a few choice composers who would stick in my head more than others. But that sort of incessant kind of understanding that I loved this sort of thing at a young age is what led me to be a film composer.
So if you don't mind, which were those composers that really stuck to you and said, these are the ones that got me thinking all day long about this movie? I think everyone has a favorite one, even they don't know necessarily the names, they definitely know the music.
Yeah, I mean, John Williams for me is the number one that got me into it. Quickly, there are so many others. I mean, like Randy Newman, John Powell, Alan Silvestri, Michael Giacchino, younger ones, Ludwig Göransson, just great, great composers that inspire and make you want to jump out of your seat with excitement. So those are just a few.
Yeah, I'll say I think some of my favorites going back were always like Danny Elfman and Hans Zimmer. For some reason, those were the two that always had something in their music that was like, you know, just stuck in your mind forever.
Absolutely. Those two are amazing. And they're so unique in the way they approach story and sonic palettes. But I think that that's the trick of a lot of composers. They are trying to be as creative as they possibly can be. It's why you get into it. Not to be vanilla.
So do you think the listeners who, when they watch a movie, know the importance of music while they're watching it? In other words, do they realize how important it is to like sweetening the film?
I think for the most part, no. I've heard phrases like, if the music does its job right, you don't even know it's there. For the most part, that's probably true. But I think there's often occasions where the music becomes a character and the audience does recognize the music. But I don't think the vast majority of audience members are aware of the huge ability music has to manipulate emotions and kind of tell you what to feel. I mean, you can be watching a comedy and the music's like, dark and spooky, and you're like, oh, a bad guy's on screen. Like, you kind of just know. The music will indicate. And so many other applications. But I think that it's quite elusive. And in fact, my wife is always saying, oh, I notice music so much more now that I've married you. And I'm thinking about it. It's like, yeah, there's a lot going on there. Someone's been thinking about it.
I totally agree with your wife. I mean, since I've started doing interviews and I've been able to talk to some composers and I really sat and listened to the music of certain pieces, you start thinking about it and it stands out way more than ever did before. You think to yourself, oh my God, this really is as much a character as the characters on screen.
Yeah. Oh man. And sometimes when the music's not great, not in a way that's bad enough for you to notice, but you're like, I'm not sure what it is. And then it clicks and you're like, oh, it's the music.
Maybe they
should have muted that one.
Oh, I mean, yeah, there was definitely some music that definitely grabbed your attention. Like the opening to the original Superman movie. I just always remember that as being, you know, that moment. But then there's other times where, even though I love Hans Zimmer a lot, sometimes I don't remember the music while it's happening until I go back and listen to the album. I'm like, oh shit, that really was beautiful. But I didn't even feel it necessarily because it was so in sync with it when it happened.
Yeah, I think he in particular has got an ability to, paint with an ambient brush where you're not latching onto a melody or like a leitmotif, some sort of theme. The theme is a vibe. The theme is a feeling. And he's a master at making very, very small changes to like a 5 minute sweep, but you're still engaged and interested the entire time. It's very difficult to do, whereas it's minimalistic, but and yet quite vast and creative at the same time.
Well, what I found fascinating about you is that you attended, I might pronounce it wrong, it wouldn't be the first, Idlewild Arts Academy. Am I pronouncing that correctly? I am.
Yeah.
And you majored in both jazz and classical piano. So as a composer and where you are now, how is jazz and classical piano incorporated into you musically and what you're doing now?
I think that a lot of composers come from a jazz background. I mean, there's a fair amount that don't come from classical or rock or just jive into film composing, but there is something inherently just, we're going to throw paint at the wall and see what sticks in a very improvisatory way, which jazz is very much like, we're going to just throw stuff together and see if we like it and keep running with that process. So I think that the jazz aspect helps me to just dive in and not worry about the consequences. And the classical aspect allows me to have a foundation of orchestra and writing for specific groups and painting with like more traditional brushes, and then taking those traditional ideas and putting them to crazy out there things as well. So I think the two kind of work hand in hand nicely.
So after you finished with Idlewild, you attended is it Berklee College of Music?
Yeah.
And with a degree in film scoring and piano voice performance. So what is it that you learned about film scoring while you attended the school? Is it film scoring, would you say, more of a science or an art?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's a business. I think the school of music is fantastic at getting kids to understand where the starting line is for being a composer. I don't think you're going to graduate from that school and be ready to compose for huge feature films. Obviously some can, but it really helped me to be a solid assistant and be able to run with the big dog, so to speak, and help maintain their gear and their workflow. And then learn the process through that sort of, you know, learning ability. You know, like a workshop, except you're getting paid to do it. Not a lot, but you get paid to do it. Boot camp, if you will. And as far as composing being an art or a science, I mean, you know, art is what we use when we can't express things through words. And I think that music is a language that everyone can understand. So I think it's a nice melding of the two, really, where you can use what your knowledge of theory and our hard, fast rules and yet flip them on their head to create these just amazingly rich emotions. So there's some sort of intersection between the two.
I mean, you have such an amazing background in music. Like I said, you not only, like I said, you have the background in classical piano and jazz and film scoring, but then also you were once again assistant composer on projects like American Horror Story, which was such a great series, Rizzoli and Isles, under the primary composer, I guess, was James Levine or Levine.
Levine.
Okay, well, 50-50. I got it right the second time. So what did Levine teach you about composition that you learned as an assistant composer that may have not been available to you as a student?
Yeah, Jimmy was an amazing composer. I mean, he is an amazing composer. He still works a ton. I think what I am glad I took away with the most, when we were working on American Horror Story, every season is a new pilot. Pilots are quite difficult because you're creating the sound, the world of the series. Often you do that once, and then you've got, if you're lucky, seven seasons, or you know, however many, two, three, four. But with American Horror Story, we had to create it every year, and the ability to kind of dig deep and create these worlds, which on the one hand is very difficult, it taught me, on the other hand, I love doing that. I love the world creation. And I think that sort of concept was what attracted me so much to animation, because in animation, you're often given the reins to just go crazy, like create something new every episode because they go to a different land or because something crazy new happens. And it's one of the last bastions where you really get to dive into full orchestra, fresh out of, you know, being pretty green. You know, you get to do full orchestra with big giant blockbuster movies often, but with TV, it's not always the case. And I really gravitated towards that. It's funny because, you know, American Horror Story sometimes is the most sadistic version of music you can create. How can you write for Mickey Mouse? Well, the ideas are still the same. You're still creating the world and creating vocabulary that you build on for each series. So I think I took that away and are very grateful for those lessons.
So when you're starting to do composition for a new series, okay, are you starting with creating the theme of the series and then moving into the rest of the story, or do you focus on particular characters and then build a theme? Is there a set rule on how to best approach creation of for a new show?
I think it varies from project to project. With Action Pack specifically, they had requested the main title theme written along with a little 3-minute test for the music underscore. So the idea was to have the main title woven throughout the score, and they wanted to hear what the main title was going to be. So it does help a lot when you have the main title to use as your rallying cry. And in fact, we used the main title for Action Pack all over the place. I tried to channel Michael Giacchino with his Up score, where he uses the same theme over and over and over and over and over, and you never get bored because it's in different ways, and it's big and grand, and it's small and quiet, or it's jazzy, or it's retro, or it's whatever. And that also is something I love to do. It makes you have to, you work within these limitations, but you get to be extremely creative vertically with them. Maybe you can't go horizontally, but it makes it really fun, and you create things you never would have created by giving yourselves those limitations.
So, I mean, and I think it's interesting that you did go from something like American Horror Story to series like Clifford the Big Red Dog. You did Chippendale's Nutty Tales. These are such extremes of music. I mean, you went from, they said these very serious, Resilient Isles is like a crime show. You got American Horror Story and all that's going on. I mean, at its heart, is it really the same approach to doing children television versus these very adult, very dark stories?
I think the essence is the same. I think, you know, storytelling is storytelling is storytelling. There's messages you're trying to convey, and they absolutely need a similar creative thought process. Obviously, there are techniques you use in American Horror Story that I would never use in, you know, Chippendale's Nutty Tales. And even when we were doing horror episodes for Halloween or something, they're like, "Now we know you worked on American Horror Story, and we don't want you to go full American Horror Story." I'm like, okay, I'll dial it back. Because there's certainly things you can do that are just crazy, scary, and uncomfortable that you don't want little children to have to go through.
You throw in there and just like warp a kid by accident. Oh, I made that one a little too strong.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, one thing that was kind of interesting, because eventually we're gonna go into Action Pack and talk about a little more about the show into detail.
Sure.
Is that there are moments in the cartoon that are in many ways a little more for a cartoon, a kid's cartoon, a little more serious. For instance, in the part Fright at the Museum, the character, I believe the name is Waz, accidentally destroys the T-Rex exhibit and is very sad. And then there's another moment where Trina is frozen by the villain. And obviously you can tell that the music gets a little more serious, because once again, it's very fun, a lot of upbeat music. When you're writing a piece like that, how do you decide, you know, how much to go into, dive into those emotions, or how much you kind of have to pull back and go, you know, this is a young kid's show. Once again, I can't corrupt the poor kids and make them cry. But at the same time, you still want to be true to the moment.
Yeah, there were a lot of conversations that Chris Hamilton, the showrunner, and I had about how dark we wanted to go and how much stakes were involved. Obviously, you want a show that people feel like there's real weight and gravity towards. You don't just want something that has no dramatic ups and downs. And there's a lot of children's entertainment that doesn't give you that. And this is, the show is literally called Action Pack. I mean, it's got to have action, it's got to have high adventure. But then you can't have the high adventure be exhausting. You have to be able to pull back. So we had exhaustive conversations about specifically, you know, that Frozen moment, like how dark do we want to go? This is the first time we've ever seen this happen. Mm-hmm. Do we want it to be like, oh my God, she's stuck forever? or, you know, obviously there needs to be some hope there, but we wanted it to really sink in that some serious stuff could happen. And through working together, you can kind of persevere through anything. So that was the narrative we were really trying to push musically and story writing wise, and everything kind of pointed to that guiding light.
Because, yeah, and I agree with completely. I mean, without that kind of action, you do need to have the danger. Because, once again, it adventure is only exciting when there's a potential for danger, I would think, and almost any story. And that like that moment where Trina is frozen solid is you know, like I said, is definitely the danger. You know, this could happen. And I guess there's a moment, I mean, as an adult, you know, you're not going to kill off a kid in a kid's cartoon. Like, you know, this is not going to happen. But I can just imagine, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, who hasn't been savvy enough with watching enough TV shows and series to know how this would work out. It's got to be a very tough moment.
Well, it's a testament to Netflix to let us go in that direction as well. I know a bunch of other studios would pull back from those things because it's just not part of the brand. But Netflix is letting us and Chris tell the story he wants to tell. And the story he wants to tell is something that's got danger. It's something that's really exciting. And the exciting moments are super exciting. And then the scary moments, you know, they really go through some transformations. And they sit with some uncomfortable emotions, and it allows kids to see, oh, those characters are working through similar issues that I'm working through, which is something that we all wanted to see on the screen. So musically, I really didn't have to do much. I got to just support those ideas, you know?
How do you get yourself mentally in like this kind of upbeat fun thing when you also have this, obviously, this darker side of you that's scary as crap?
You know, I'm a pretty silly person in general. I think that, you know, diving into the fun animation world is relatively natural for me. I think the more twisted sadistic stuff is the harder push. And luckily, you know, I haven't had to do it where in the morning I'm working on American Horror Story and then in the evening I'm working on Action Pack too often. There's obviously been times where I've had to do drastically different projects, and it's a challenge. But you just got to take a few deep breaths and get your mind mentally prepared and dive in.
When you're not in the mood to be that kind of upbeat of a writer, are you still able to fake it, I guess, when you're ready to write?
I love this question because I found that nothing motivates me like a deadline. If they gave me 4 weeks to write an episode, I would take 4 weeks to write an episode. They gave me 4 days to write an episode, I would take 4 days to write an episode. So I honestly, it's really about, you know, that timeline process and where we are in the series and what needs to get done. As far as creativity and the joyfulness, it really comes from the story itself. I'm really just enhancing what's already being given to you. And with this show, it wasn't hard to do. It was, there was no struggle ever to try and really make it shine brighter through music, because it was such a strong and well-crafted narrative. So it was really a joy to work on this show.
You're my damn with teachers. So I just had an insight into you as a student. You know, the paper's due in a week, 12 o'clock the night before, you're sitting there typing it all out. I'm going to get it done. I got 20 minutes. I got more than enough time.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the way to do it. You're the most creative you are ever going to be when you've got to get it done.
So you don't get hit with like writer's block at all? You're as a writer, you're just like, shit, today's just isn't happening.
Not yet. I'm knocking on wood that doesn't happen. I think that what I enjoy the most is working with others. And when you're something to work with, there's always something to inspire you from, you know. Yeah. And there's always something to take away. little bits from a story and find the parts of it that you really love and enhance those and make them shine.
Can you tell us a little bit about Action Pack? I know you know it's on Netflix. The first episode, I think, has already aired. Is it just the first one, I think, or?
It might be the first two, but first yes, two they've dropped. It's a Action Pack is a preschool superhero adventure show. And it's mainly surrounding these four kids, Watts, Trina, Clay, and Ren. And they all have specific superpowers. And they are kind and caring, and they're all about doing good in their neighborhood, but they also often realize that working together is the best way to achieve their mission. And it's a show with a ton of heart and a ton of action, and it's really fun.
Like I said, I had the pleasure of watching the first episode, and like I said, it's a cute little show. I mean, I enjoyed it. I mean, as an adult, I mean, as much as you can, you know, for a kid, for 6-year-old, but I mean, it's sure. Interesting, and I kind of thought how difficult it is to write a show like that. I do a little bit of writing on the side, and how different it is to write a show because you have villains, but you also have to give them reasons that are okay for preschool age kids to accept. You know what I'm saying? Like, a Co-Snap character isn't necessarily a bad character. He wants everyone to enjoy the snow like he thinks he enjoys snow, and just assumes if he's happy, everyone's happy. And I know a lot of students like that. And but like I said, you can't have him be like Mr. Freeze, who's trying to destroy the city to, you know, get revenge on the bank. And I'm saying it's interesting how they walk that challenge. And it's, you know, and there's definitely some layers to it and lessons and like that, which I think is a very smart way of doing it.
I think it was really important across the board to have kids that were really relatable to other kids, right? Mm. Going through similar emotions and similar discoveries. And as the characters grow, as you saw, Cold Snap grows and learns to listen to others. I mean, listening is a big part of growing. But you've got kids in real life that, oh, maybe I should listen, or, you know, that might happen to me as well. And there's kind of these life lessons that are peppered throughout the whole series that make it really engaging and entertaining for kids going through that development process.
And I must admit, as I teach high school, and a lot of those kids still need to learn those same lessons.
Sure. And it makes it fun. You know, it's in a superhero narrative. So there's all these epic adventures that they get to do. But at the end of the day, there are people who just want to do good by their friends.
Hmm. So how did you get involved with Action Pack? Did they come to you? Did you go to them? And what was it about the project that you thought to yourself, this is something I can sink my teeth in. I want to be a part of this.
So I've known Chris Hamilton for a while. Chris Leonard is a very, very successful, talented film composer. Chris Hamilton and I worked together in, 5 years ago on a short series that he did for Disney Junior. And when he was developing the show, he had lunch with me and was just talking about the show and what he was thinking, and he mentioned that he wanted a show that was synth poppy, like Marshmallow superhero show, and I thought that's never gonna work. And they're in development, so a year will go by, and when they're finally in post-production, they'll have changed their thinking. And a year went by, and get an email from Chris, hey, we're looking for composers. Netflix is going to do a demo process. Are you interested? I was like, yeah. They sent me over the brief. It was synth pop, marshmallow-ish kind of score for superheroes. And I was like, oh, okay, so this stuck. So I went and I created a bunch of playlists with some synth pop artists that I just really, really enjoyed, and tried to see how I could connect the synth poppy, fun, upbeat attitude with superhero adventure, because I really thought that there was a disconnect there. And the more I listened, the more I found some songs that I just absolutely loved. And I was like, well, maybe I can bring in certain elements. Well, how can I do this? And I kind of settled on the idea of using a lot of, first of all, synths, but also percussion, which, you know, is so much of what synth pop relies on. And then peppering in like epic brass and epic strings and huge horn lines and runs, and using the harmonies that you would hear in Marvel, but in the style of synth pop groove. And that amalgamation created this really unique score that I haven't heard from any preschool show out there. and I'm really proud of it. So, you know, kudos to Chris, who knew what he was doing from the very beginning, because he made a believer out of me, and it's been a really fun adventure to be a part of.
And the music is extremely catchy. I mean, it like I said, even as an adult, you listen to it, it's automatically fun. I mean, it's just kind of like continuously entertaining, fun, upbeat music. And you know, you think to yourself, like I said, even as especially the opening theme, I thought to myself, that's gonna be stuck in my head for a little while today, most certainly. And you did.
Yeah, we
go ahead.
Thank you. Oh, we wanted to have, you know, make it as earwormy as possible, but be able to utilize it in a bunch of different ways. So we wanted it to be super epic and super quiet and super fast and super slow and all the things in between. So it took a while for that main theme to kind of come to the forefront. A lot of ideas kind of made it onto the cutting room floor, so to speak, but I think we got it there.
I totally think you did. I mean, like I said, I don't think I've heard a score like that. And like I said, I thought it was so much fun to listen to.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you very much.
It's one of those weird things where, as you know, like I do when I do interviews like this, I get to listen to stuff I wouldn't normally listen to. I mean, I'm 42 years old. I'm not going to normally watch Action Pack for obvious reasons. It's not made for me. I don't have kids. But having a chance to listen to it, and I, you know, really pay attention to the music, I thought it was catchy as all hell. I thought to myself, if that was an iTunes piece, I probably would pick it up, because it's just fun. It's just a fun little piece.
Awesome. Thank you. I'm really glad you liked it.
It really was good. So one thing I was wondering, you kind of went over this a little bit, but if you go into maybe a little more detail. So what is the steps between maybe either getting the script or watching the episode to actually going ahead and composing the piece? Is it, do you get the script first and you start thinking about it, or are you getting the actual animation first and thinking about it, or the voice?
Yes. So that was also very project specific. In different episodes, we needed to have different processes for. There was a Christmas episode that it hasn't come out yet, so I can't talk too much about it, but I got the script early because they wanted me to do a few things in advance and then animate to it. Often the music, the underscore, comes in after the animation's already done. Mm-hmm. And so I would get close to lock picture, if not lock picture, and have a spotting session with the showrunner where we would go through the different things he wanted me to hit. And I would ask questions like, how dark do you want me to go when she gets frozen, or how light do you want me to go? Do you want me to have no music there? So there's that aspect to it. And then I'll go off and do my little music thing and come back, and we would review it, and he would tell me what he didn't like about it, and I'd go and change those things, and we would review it again and then send it to Netflix, and Netflix would tell me what they didn't like about it, and then I'd go and fix those things and send it back, and it'd be great, or you know, a few more tweaks, and then it'd be good to go. But for the most part, that was the process. It was a spotting session, go off and do it, come back, review, go off and fix, come back, send it to the network, and they give me their notes, I do the notes, and then we're off to the races.
So does the network always have say on how an episode goes, or is Netflix just different because of how the deals work with Netflix?
They can. I think that Netflix is just like every other company. They've got their brand that they're trying to cultivate. So they don't want the music to go, you know, if the music went too dark for their taste, they might want to pull it back. They weren't too heavily involved. You know, they just were there to a little bit of guardrails for where they wanted the show to go. So yeah, they weren't as involved as some other networks I've worked with have been. But then there were times where they had a point of view that Chris and I didn't see that they wanted to go down, and we went down that road.
As an artist, is it difficult to get feedback that may not be I don't know if it's positive or is like positive feedback. And make those changes once you kind of get yourself in the mindset that this is how you want it to sound. Is it hard to kind of go, all right, I can change it for this guy or that guy and kind of adapt myself to what they want?
No, it's not difficult to do that. I feel like I present the option that I like the most, and it's a give and take, you know. Then they say, well, try it this way, and it might be a way I might not have seen. So I try it that way, and I go, oh, that's cool. Then maybe we can do it this way. And they go, yeah. And then we can go, you know, and we kind of build on top of one another. It's not, I don't see it as here's my art, approve or I quit. It's more of a give and take, and we're creating it together. So it's where the fun kind of comes in is when they say, oh, you know, I like that idea, but rather than getting a big flourish, why don't we pause for a second and then get a big flourish, you know, or whatever. Mm. There are certainly some moments that I felt were a little bit like my babies, and if they didn't like that, I would be bummed to have to change them. Luckily, I don't think that happened. But, you know, it happens here and there where you fall in love with something so much you really don't want to change it. But Chris was great because if you kind of came to him with a reason for why you did these things, he would sit there and go, oh, yeah, okay, cool, I see that. Yeah, okay, moving on. Like, he wasn't a dogmatic showrunner that you might get. So that was fun to really work with him.
You know, I can't help but think that's the difference between someone who's successful like you and someone who may not be. Because I know so many people, like artists who are, you know, writers, artists, whatnot, when you give them feedback that isn't, you know, they want something changed, they get all pouty and bitchy about it. They're like, oh, son of, I hate this. And, you know, I quit. I'm done. And I think it takes a true professional and someone who I think will be successful to go, all right, I'm going to listen to what you have to say. Make the changes, you know, especially you're the one paying for it. And I think that might be the difference between someone who is, like you said, a true professional, successful person, and maybe someone who just kind of like quits.
Sure. I also think that there's a perspective to be had. I mean, I feel so lucky that I get to do this for a living mm-hmm. and write music for kid shows and for TV shows and high dramas and action adventures and stuff that I love to listen to on my own. And, you know, if they want me to change something, that's great. I'm happy to do it because I get to do what I love to do, you know?
No, I totally agree with that. That it must be so awesome to do what you love as a career. It so few people.
Yeah, I mean, and it can be extremely frustrating, you know, when you have something in your head, but it's just not coming out quite right. And you're just kind of circling. I call it, you circle the drain of perfection. You get there eventually. But it might take a second to crack the nut, you know, and when you finally do, it feels great, but getting there is the struggle.
So do you know if Ashen Pack's music is going to be available on something like iTunes or as an album or whatever?
I'm not sure. I hope so. But I don't know for a fact if it will be. That's something you'll have to ask Netflix.
If you have Netflix phone number, I'll go and ask.
I will give you the number once we get done with the interview. Definitely.
Oh, that is awesome. I appreciate that. So what else can listeners look forward to from you? Not only, I mean, we know Ashen Pact is, but how many episodes is Ashen Pact going to be?
I believe it's 17 episodes.
Oh, wow.
Or 15 episodes in a special. I'm not entirely sure.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
Somewhere
of episodes
around 15 to 17.
This season sounds like a lot from Netflix. Usually Netflix, I always think of Netflix like, you know, short little 5, 6, 7, 8 episodes. I mean, the fact they're going all 17, that's huge. That's a lot of episodes.
Yeah, I think for kids animation, the kids space, I think they were going to even do more. But then with COVID and development, I think it was better to lower the episodic count to get a higher quality for each episode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it looks amazing. And they did an amazing job from beginning to end. So I think it was a smart decision. But yeah, I think they're tending to be larger episodic seasons in the animation space.
So what is next from you, other than Ashen Pact? What else are you working on?
Well, currently I just wrapped up a feature film with Bear Grylls. It's an animated adventure show, and it's one of three that's being made. So right now we're in the middle of movie two, which has at the moment I don't think the title's been announced, so that's mum's the word, but
okay,
working on a Bear Grylls movie as of right now.
That is awesome, and hopefully when there's more episodes of the movies are ready to come out, come back and talk with me about it. I would love to talk about more music and more things that you've worked on.
Absolutely.
So Mr. Burnett, it was a pleasure talking with you. You're fantastic.
Likewise.
Thank you so much. All right. So have a very good night. And like I said, anytime you're ready to come back, the door's always open for you.
Thank you.